Blog Talk Radio.
And I got the HD blues, and my life feels kind of rough. Baby, I won't ever, ever give up. You might see me moving.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to Help for HD Live. Help for HD Live is brought to you by Help for HD International and is made possible by our sponsor, the Griffin Foundation, and an education grant from Teva Pharmaceuticals. Today, we are going to be talking about challenges in placing our loved ones with HD. We are very lucky at Help for HD International that we have Katrina Hamill for so many different reasons, but one thing that we always lean on her for is her background in hospice care and her amazing knowledge in care facilities, because she has done it for literally half of her life. So I am excited to have her on the show today. We talk together about this subject all the time, one-on-one. So to bring some of her knowledge and some things that how she feels about this kind of space is excited to bring it on the air and talk about the also the article that just came out. So welcome to the show, Katrina, and let's jump right in and you tell us about your background in hospice care and care facilities.
Sure. Hi, everyone. I started as a teenager with, you know, ill family members, you know, both with Huntington's and other diseases, as most families have. and it started from there. I would help and assist other family members with caring for our loved ones. And slowly that graduated into wanting to go into some type of medical field. I did some medical assisting courses and things like that. But really where my experience came from was hands-on experience in care homes. And I started out doing Alzheimer's and dementia care, which also was in a care home that took people to the end of their lives. And in that process, I learned how interested I was in hospice care, just because of how, you know, everyone dies. And that's something to always in mind, that this isn't just about Huntington's disease or just about my loved one, that everyone will end up dying. And there's different obvious ways that that can happen. So my background has been through, like I said, the Alzheimer's and dementia care. And then I had my own in-home care. I wouldn't want to call it necessarily a company, but we were a support for families in our local area that would connect them with caregivers that were experienced. And then after that point, I moved on to a facility that was strictly hospice care. And this was hospice care for families that were of low income. And it was the best decade of my life, for sure, as far as things that I was able to experience and things that I learned. And I learned about compassion and, you know, empathy and all sorts of different diseases and also ways to kind of help families get their way into care homes or get their way into our care home. We really tried hard to make it work for everyone. So I have a bit of a varied background in care homes and hospice care.
Yeah, and then in your last home you worked in, I remember you, because we were obviously we were volunteering for Help for HD together at that time. I remembered you had people
right.
with HD in that facility.
Absolutely. So it was interesting to me because my first hands-on experience with somebody other than a family member was at a place I managed or assisted manager for hospice care. And it was interesting because, you know, you hear about how Huntington's it manifests in different ways for different people, dependent upon whether it be CAG or whether it be environment or whatever other things that contribute to the way someone is progressing. I met at least three people, and in our bedrooms, we had eight bedrooms. So it was three people over the course of, say, the first 8 years before my mother came in, that seemed to be a high number in such a small city with not a high population of people at Huntington's. So I was able to kind of care for these family members and see in what different ways I could help them. Some people had a lot of, like the actual residents themselves were, some were combative, two were combative, the other one was very docile. And one had no family and the other two did. There was a lot of different variables, but it was a great teaching experience. And then my mother also came in after I'd been there for a solid 8 years. And in order for me to continue working and to care for her when her hospice needs increased, I was able to move her into the care home. And I was able to sleep in the room and take care of her 24/7 and also work. So, it was interesting because I had an experience taking care of other people's families with Huntington's until I was in hospice care in Santa Barbara.
Yeah, and I think you just brought up something really, really good to talk about is you had your mother needed an immense amount of care. As we all know, our loved ones need at the end stages of HD. And I know placing my husband was the hardest thing and I almost felt like a failure, and I felt like, I can't do this. Why can't I do this? And I think that there's such a stigma around, you know, placing people or going into hospice care and I'll do it myself at home. That's not always the best case scenario. Your loved one is not always getting the best care at home. That a facility can offer, because these are trained people in the field.
I was able to like go from like caregiver 24/7 in home to like daughter, you know, like, yeah, I did sleep there. Yeah. I did take care of her there, but other people did too. It wasn't like I was literally connected to her hip or anything. So I was able to be daughter again, which was, it was extremely valuable to me looking back. But you're right. People often feel guilty. And this isn't, again, in just the HD community. This is in the Alzheimer's community. This is in so many communities where they need long-term care or when they need hospice care. And in my particular experience, I've seen that majority of people feel guilty. And the fact of the matter is there isn't a whole lot that people can do about that, except for, you know, talking about it with other people, people who can relate, people who understand that feeling, and really gaining support and strength from other community members. And the whole fact of it is that care, when you're trying to do 100% of somebody's care, you're going to be tired. You're going to be exhausted. You're going to be completely worn out. And if you're trying to do it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week with no relief, there's absolutely no way that somebody can get everything they need in advanced stages. Now, that doesn't mean don't do it. It just means that if you can bring in other resources, try and do that. Try and relieve yourself. Try and relieve your loved one so you guys can have a better relationship even. I know that I had the opportunity, like I would have brought someone in that could like hang out with my mom so I could go even run errands by myself and not, you know, feel like I'm stuck to my house. And the reality is that isn't always a possibility for people. And I think that the more that we try and focus on delegating and trying to accept help when there is help being offered, I think that's something we could all work on, including myself. I mean, I was professionally a caregiver, and I was very stubborn. I did not want anyone else taking care of my mom because I thought I could do it best. Well, I mean, if I had hours, I could tell you how awful I did. It was not a good experience for either of us or my family. I think that it's really hard on the guilt. It's really, really hard, especially when you, meaning me, I don't have Huntington's. And so to be her caregiver and to kind of push her off into a care home, I did feel mass loads of guilt. And as if I was taking the easy way out and, you know, all of those things. But looking back and knowing that I'm going to be doing this for generations and generations to come, I know that I will do it differently the next time. And right now I'm caring for my brother, and we talked about care, and I said I would keep him out of a care home as long as I could, and that's the only promise I made. I didn't say that I will never. I just said I'll do it as long as I can. We'll have to work as a team. You know, we'll bring in resources if we can, and go on from there.
And I think that's so important what you just said, because I think it's really scary when we make promises, because I remember making promises to my husband, not knowing what end stage of Huntington's was. I didn't understand the immense amount of care he was going to need, and I didn't understand how much I was going to have to watch him and help him. And, you know, I think that, you know, of course, in the, you know, mid-stage motor manifest stages of HD and stuff, we can say, oh, you know, yeah, we're going to keep, you know, we're going to care for you from home to the very end in this. Well, the end stage is, I mean, until I got there with my husband, I heard stories. I have friends. I saw my friends in end stage HD. I had no clue what it was like to live at home every day with end stage or late stage HD. And it's incredibly challenging, and it's exhausting for obviously for my husband, it was absolutely exhausting. And for me and my kids. And I remember, you know, I Katrina and I, you know, talked about this when I finally made the decision, and I contacted Katrina to help me. You know, I had come home. I needed to go grocery shopping to feed Mike and my kids. They had to eat. And I ran to the grocery store with the kids, and it was a fast trip just to grab something. And I came home, and Mike was trying to swim. Mike knew I thought he knew. And when I came home, he was gasping for air. I was thinking, oh my gosh, can you imagine if he would have drowned and my kids would have found him, or I would have found him, or the suffering he would have endured before we got home. He needed care, and I was not providing him good care. And I had to come to that realization, like Katrina did with her mom, and so many other people in our community has to come to the realization we are not able to offer the care that our loved ones need. And so this is a hard subject to talk about, but it's definitely something that is really prevalent in our community. And so Katrina, you've seen it all. I know you have, because I know you've helped so many families in our community with placement. So let's talk about the challenges families face.
So like you already mentioned, is the guilt. That's the first thing that has to be kind of dealt with, because the decision has to be made. It has to be made like, okay, I'm ready. The very first step, because that's the biggest step to get to. And I would say after that, it's going to depend on your area. It's going to depend on your family. It's going to depend on the support you have, the financial status you have, the insurance. So there's a lot of factors that goes into placement. But I think just familiarizing yourself with some of the terminology and the kind of common discussions that go on within when you're talking to people who are in the intake office, per se. So I think gathering a list of facilities in your area that, you know, will even provide long-term care. I think that in itself is hard. Like in my town, there's two, and they don't even accept most insurances. So it's just very challenging to find a place that will accept your insurance. Okay. Now, after you find out if they even accept your insurance, you have to find out if they accept people with Huntington's. And some people will hear that word and they'll say, no, sorry, no, we don't accept anyone with Huntington's. And so you're very much labeled with the diagnosis that our loved ones have, or that we have, whatever. It is very hard to get past sometimes. But I think my suggestion is to not give up. And if somebody says, you know, no, we don't take anyone with Huntington's, that doesn't mean that the door's shut. It just means that it's an opportunity for a conversation. And that's a big challenge because some people are not willing, but maybe they are. Maybe they are willing to have a small education conversation. Maybe their concern is combative behavior. Maybe it's anger and aggression, et cetera. And so you can ask questions like, you know, can I ask why you don't accept someone with Huntington's? And maybe they'll give you some more information. So the challenge is to find a care facility that will accept someone with Huntington's that has your, that, you know, takes your insurance and different things like that. But then there's also the age factor. So if your loved one, which, you know, not everyone, but a high percentage of families that are trying to place their loved one, the person who needs the care is definitely under 65. And at least in California, you know, I'm not familiar with all states and placements, though I've worked with many of you guys on helping you guys with placement. In California, I know that they have a system of waivers. So every facility is licensed and they are given a certain license. So there isn't really a license for people with Huntington's under the age of 65. There just isn't. So basically it's like 65 and older and, you know, long-term care, end of life care, things like that. But they are given, like in Medicare facilities, they are given waivers. It depends on how many beds they have. And they're given a certain amount of waivers that allow them to care for people who are under the age of 65. So in knowing this, if you find a facility that says, yes, we take people with Huntington's, and you guys start a discussion and then they're like, well, you know, we can't take your loved one because they are 40 years old. You need to kind of maybe investigate a little bit. Do you guys have waivers for people under 65? And if they say yes, but they're full, then at least you can keep that on your checklist of let's come back to this one, because things change. People leave, people pass away, people, you know, their status changes. So continue to keep that facility on your list, but always ask about waivers, because not everyone knows about that, but it really does help to know when you go into conversation about different placements or about different questions that you have. So formulate a list of questions that you have for them as far as do they allow you to keep your loved one there all the way through hospice. You know, there's a lot of questions that need to be listed and gone through, which I know is a little bit more detailed in the Huntington Post article, which is on our website. But I do find that the challenges are that there isn't a facility nearby, or that the facility does not take someone with Huntington's, or that there is age restrictions, or, you know, obviously the guilt factor. And I'm sure there's many more challenges that people have faced in, you know, trying to place their loved one. But the ones I'm listing are the most frequent that I hear about.
Yeah, definitely. And then one thing I think that you told me that I think is so important for people to know is one thing when we started the journey of looking at facilities together, you said, Katie, I don't want you to look at the fancy place. I don't want you to look at, mm-hmm. you know, the nice furniture or the, you know, because if they're spending all this time cleaning, are they caring for your loved one? And I thought that was really big for me, because I was looking for that really nice kept place that was going to be this perfect home setting for my husband, and I wasn't. So talk a little bit about that, because I think that was really, really important that you got that through my head.
Yeah, I mean, I've worked at different types of facilities that have either been strictly for low income or, you know, strictly cash pay with really, really good insurance. You know, there's different types of facilities and care homes and things like that. But you're right. One thing that I really learned with working in different care homes is the cleanest one was not the one that had the best care. Now, of course, you don't want to walk in and find it filthy because that's unsanitary and all of that, but that's not something you should look at. That's your first kind of decision maker. When I walk into a facility, a care home, I try and look at the people who work there, and if they greet you with warmth and, you know, say hi and look you in the eyes and aren't just hanging around, that they, that you can tell that they're really engaged with people that they're talking to and that they are tending to residents who live in the facility, I think that's the most important thing, because when you're not there, it doesn't matter, you know, it doesn't matter about if they're going to be mopping the floor. It more matters if they're going to be listening to the call out of your loved one saying they're in pain or that they're hungry or things that, that actually matter about care. And there are many families that I have helped in and outside of the Huntington's community that have let go of really good opportunities to get some really awesome care based on what the outside of a building looked like or the parking lot or that it didn't have updated sinks and all of these different things when in reality it was the best care in town. So I think you're right for bringing that up, Katie. It's just you have to think about what's best for, and sometimes it's just about meeting the people, showing up to the place and saying hello and getting to know kind of their vibe.
Yeah. And I know when I was getting ready to place my husband, the one thing, you know, when we were together and we were looking at homes and we were going down the list and we were calling, you know, I think it's so challenging to decide that you're going to place your loved one. You go through months and months and months of battling in your head, talking to family members, talking to friends, talking to our community, talking to each other about what you're going to do. And you finally make that decision. Okay. It's in my loved one's best situation for the family and for them and for the caregiver is to place. You make that decision. And then that is the start of craziness of people denying you and saying no and doors shutting on you and all these different types of homes. Katrina, you did such a good job explaining that to me. There's different types of homes and different things that each one of them does. But then, you know, you get discouraged because you go and you say, okay, this is it. And then they say no. So what advice do you have for our community that are just have been going through the challenges of placing and being denied and denied and denied? What encouraging things do you have to tell them?
Yeah, I think it's really hard. I mean, it's one of the hardest things that I have helped people do, because it's not like you're all geared up and like ready for a battle. You're kind of almost feeling defeated at that point. And some families are different. Some families are like, finally, the relief. I need this now. I've been needing it for a long time. But majority of us are thinking, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm doing this. And so I think that finding people, even social workers at your local clinics, your local center of excellences. I mean, you can even reach out to me. I'm time allowing. I can help. I'm just not expert in all areas, that's for sure. But I think that you can't go through this alone. To do it by yourself is not fair to you. And I think that you need to find your team. You need to find a friend that's even willing to see while you make the phone calls, a friend that's, you know, going to walk in the facility with you. Reach out to a social worker who has advice on local facilities. Go in and meet the people. And sometimes reality is that you don't have that much time and it has to happen quickly. And in that event, it's going to have to be, you know, you bite the bullet and you really find one solid person that's going to help you through it. And that's most likely going to be a social worker. I mean, they do this well. And if you did end up needing assistance in finding a social worker, you're welcome to also email me, which all of our emails are our first names, Katrina@helpforhd.org. And you can email me and I can help with at least trying to connect you to a social worker in your area. But basically, my advice to you is don't give up. There is somewhere that your loved one can go. We just have to find it. And so just don't give up and lean hard on your loved ones. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so funny you said, I didn't even think about that because about talking about that on the show. And that's a whole nother show in itself. But I remember when I walked in the first time to the care facility my very first one, I ended up visiting a lot, but I remember sitting in the intake office and I luckily had my mother with me and my sister, and Katrina had just left. We had gone to some, we called all the time, but that was the first meeting. And I sat down and I had no clue that I was going to lose it. I sat there, I walked in strong. I walked in there ready to go. I had my list of questions. I had all my information ready to go about my husband's medications. I had everything ready to go. And I walked in and I sat down and I just started sobbing. And I was lucky that I was glad I had, first of all, the facility was great because they were incredibly compassionate and had empathy and stuff to my situation.
Right.
But I had my mom there to cry on and to say, I'm 36 years old and I'm placing my strong, amazing husband that now is incontinent and is falling and is hurting himself. Like, there's this whole whirlwind of emotion that this is a new phase. And
and
it was hard. And so I'm really glad you brought that up, Katrina. You can't do this alone. You need a support system. You are your loved one's support, right? They're giving them care. You're getting them what they need. You're getting them what they deserve. To be, to be cared for and treated with respect. You're fighting for that. But who's standing with Katrina? I'm very, very lucky that my best friend in this whole world knows so much about care homes and HD, and I'm able to. But we all need someone to lean on, and we all need someone to help us through this, because placing your loved one, as many challenges there are, one, the guilt and the loss and grief through the process, I think is some of the hardest things that you're going to walk through.
For sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, any final thoughts before we jump off air?
No, I guess so. I'm saying no, but I'm going to say something. But I just think that everyone should just reach out to people and try. I mean, it's really hard for me, who may or may not know you and not know your certain situations, but to try to reach out for support and have conversations about placement, if that's what you think you may be ready for. And let's face it, we, majority of our family members may need that. So let's talk about it early. Let's talk about it now. Let's talk about how we can kind of start navigating that and get your support team ready.
Yeah, absolutely. You can always get a hold of all of us. Like Katrina said, our emails are our first names and at helpforhd.org. Katrina's is KATRINA@HELP, the number 4, HD.org. And so I am thankful that we have Katrina and thankful for doing the show. You guys can also read more of some things that Katrina was talking about with challenges of placing our loved ones on the Huntington's Post. To get to the Huntington's Post, you just go to www.helpforhd.org and you go to the Huntington's Post tab on the top and you will see all the recent articles. There's some about placement. There's some about one just came out about security and those kind, because that's another challenge we face is getting our loved ones their benefit.
Absolutely.
An article just came out about that, as well as some of the, and I would go back even to some of the challenging symptoms associated with HD that were written about in the month of May. They're really good articles. So I think that is it for now. Always remember, Help for HD, we are here for you guys. If you guys need us, we are a email or phone call away. We are here to support our community and in any way we possibly can. We're living this as well every day. So we understand the challenges we're facing in so many different spaces. So if we can help in any way support you through those challenges, we are here. Next week, tune in at 1 o'clock, same time, same place. We're going to talk to Global Genes. They are a nonprofit that serves rare disease communities. We are going to talk to Angie, their COO over there, and see what's going on at Global Genes. And then the following week, we're going to talk to Cole from Hopes. So that's the group in Stanford that has a whole bunch of resources for Huntington's disease families. So I think that's it. I think we can wrap up the show for now. Until next week, everyone have a safe week.